In less than a fortnight, JobKeeper and JobSeeker payments are set to be reduced. Combined, these two schemes have helped pay the bills for millions of Australians and thousands of businesses. But the end of this month sees both schemes being cut back by $300 a fortnight. Is it time for this? What will the impact be on you? We'd very much like to hear from you. You can get in touch via our Facebook page. Just search for RN Life Matters. And if you'd like, we'd like to hear from you, and you can follow us and like us there too. Casey Chambers is the Executive Director of Anglicare Australia. They've been in that very big equation of supporting people in need during this time. And Casey, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you.
Tell us what Anglicare has been seeing when it comes to demand for your services in light of COVID and these kind of support payments.
Well, it's certainly a pretty complex picture, Michael. I mean, that old curse of may you live in interesting times is certainly upon us. And what we see is lots of different things happening. So we've seen a huge increase for many of our services. Anglicare works with supports 1 in 20 people across the country in lots of different services. So we do have an opportunity to work with lots of communities and people. But what we saw at the very start of this crisis was a really welcome and wise decision from the government where they doubled JobSeeker. And as you say, that's about to have a decrease. And then is actually at the moment still planned to return to its original level in December. But what we initially saw then was that families and households who had been existing on that very, very low payment for a long time.
Which, just by the way, Casey, just remind us what, when it was still called Newstart, what was that payment a fortnight?
It was about $282 a week. So about $560 a fortnight. So when you think of $282 a week and then put that against weekly rents and things like that, you can see it's not very much. And at the moment, although the Prime Minister's given some indication we won't go back to that exact level, at the moment that's the plan to where we're going. So the issue with that, of course, is we've seen many, many more people come on to that. We've now got 1.6 million Australians unemployed, and there's no sign of that changing in the immediate future. And incidentally, about 1.6 million people unemployed. There's also over a million Australian children living in households that are supported by JobSeeker. So that's a big issue, a big cohort we need to be looking at. But we did initially see lots and lots of proof that people who had been living on Newstart, now called JobSeeker for years, had suddenly had adequate money. We heard from people who were no longer, told us they hadn't had to feed their children two-minute noodles for their main meal for, you know, a month. We heard from one lady who said she was just so looking forward to buying her daughter new clothes for the first time at the start of the school term, the first time that child had ever had new clothes for school. And we heard from people who could afford to buy both the medicine, the medications that their doctor recommended they have. But of course, then we saw lots of new people coming on to that unemployment benefit who hadn't had to have the same parsimonious living conditions here, who did have market rents to pay, and who had car repayments and all those kind of expectations that go with it when you have a full-time job. So we've certainly seen huge stress of people coming into our emergency relief centres, many more people seeing our financial counsellors and actually reporting a much higher level of mental health stresses to financial counsellors. You know, anxiety about how they're going to make things ends meet, depression about whether they're going to become the dispensable people in this recession, those kind of issues really coming to the fore. And then, of course, we're seeing a huge pressure on the housing market where, you know, affordable rents, the sort of Economics 101 or Capitalism 101 would tell us that rents would go down during this time. But we recently conducted research on 77,000 rentals across the country and found that rental prices hadn't gone down at the bottom end of the market, because what we're actually seeing is greater competition as everybody's trying to downsize their costs. So
we're certainly
seeing a big issue.
Yeah, and that's alarming too, because, Casey, I think we were given to understand that there were moratoriums across the country on eviction, and there were, I think, also commitments made to not increase rents markedly. But are you saying that even so, housing affordability, even with more breathing space in JobSeeker, it's still out of reach for many people on low incomes? That's the problem.
That's right. It certainly was. So out of 77,000 properties, we had actually seen affordability at the lower levels. So the people on Job Seeker and Job Keeper and minimum wage had actually decreased over the last 6 months from April to September. And there's a few reasons for that. It's competition at that lower end of the market. But also, although the moratoriums are in place, they're in place that nobody can evict anybody because of COVID-related issues. They can still evict people for no reason. And of course, a lot of times you're asking private individual tenants to negotiate with private individual landlords. And we do have a system where we do expect a private market to look after low and medium income housing, which is probably pretty unrealistic. You know, we've now got landlords who are under the same stress as themselves.
Yes.
And we've got many of those people who have managed to negotiate something, who've simply managed to negotiate a hold on their rent. But of course, that means they're coming up to large arrears. And those moratoriums and the mortgage deferments for landlords are all coming to an end about the same time as JobKeeper and JobSeeker are seeing this decrease. So it is a cliff.
It certainly sounds very cataclysmic indeed. Casey, I know you have some interesting and, in fact, poignant case studies from around the nation about people's lives, and we'll come to those in a moment, because I'd like to welcome in as well Professor Fran Baum, who's the director of the Southcote Institute for Health, Society and Equity at Flinders University. Fran, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Thanks for the invitation.
Now, Fran, the pandemic has affected everyone, but not equally, I'm thinking, and I think Casey's made that point pretty strongly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's very clear. Everybody has been affected by the pandemic, but some people have been much more affected than others. And it's the groups, of course, that we know usually are suffering from social and economic inequities and live in very vulnerable circumstances, as Casey has really outlined very well.
Right. So I know that you're proposing a social vaccine in forms of, and perhaps we could talk about what you mean by that.
Well, I guess there's been, you know, everyone is talking about we need a vaccine to stop the pandemic. And when we find that, which could, of course, still take us 12 or 18 months or so, we're still going to be left with all these, what I see as social fault lines that have been laid open, you know, by COVID-19.
Yes, they were already there, but this has really further exposed them as being quite stark, aren't they? Yeah,
exactly. And we know that then health gets unequally distributed. So people who are richer tend to be healthier than people who are poor. And we've seen that really clearly. Now, if we don't take a step back and say, look, okay, we'll get a biological vaccine, but what can we do to ensure we're a more equal society, giving everybody a fair go, and then working out what are those policy measures that would do that? What my colleague and I, Sharon Frill, are asking is that a social vaccine metaphor is what we need. Because if we have that, then we're going to be much more resilient to any future pandemics too.
And there are some examples already in the community, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's lots of things that we do. I mean, I think the government, by doubling JobSeeker, immediately introduced a social vaccine. Imagine if they hadn't done that and people really were much more stressed, were much less able to stay at home. That would have been much worse. So that would have been an example of that.
Another one I was thinking of was the very effective messaging from Aboriginal controlled health organisations.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, around the world, we found that Indigenous people have been incredibly vulnerable to the virus when it's been very widespread. And our Aboriginal community controlled health sector went into gear straight away and really secured and made sure that their own communities were safe, showing the value of that kind of participation in the delivery of health services. We know it's a very good model. There's more and more work showing that. But I think the reaction that was led by the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, led by Pat Turner, and the sort of coalition of services around the country did a brilliant job. And it just showed that because we've invested in that sector, we're now gaining the benefits from that.
My guests are Professor Fran Baum and Casey Chambers, who's the Executive Director of Anglicare Australia. Now, just yesterday, the Deloitte Access Economics Report into JobSeeker was released. This report was commissioned by the Australian Council of Social Services, ACOS, and here's what ACOS CEO Cassandra Goldie told RN Breakfast yesterday.
Right now, we've got 1.6 million people relying on JobSeeker, Fran, and 2.2 million people, including parents, are receiving this additional income support. Every dollar is very precious to them. They are finally able to eat three times a day, keep a roof over their head, buy a new pair of shoes for their children, all those very basics. People on really low incomes are still spending, Fran. That's the key here. And that is, of course, helping to keep other people in jobs. The Deloitte report highlights that this is about jobs in retail, in food, in transport, all these kinds of essential activities, the services area. And, of course, that's helping to keep other people in employment. And they estimate what's at stake here is 145,000 jobs at risk over the next 2 years if this precious income support is cut back now.
That's the economic argument put forward in this Deloitte Access Economics report. Casey Chambers from Anglicare. Let's talk about the impact on some of the clients that have been accessing your services over the last 6 months of COVID. Let's start with Ruby and Bruce, who I think live in a caravan park in southeast New South Wales.
They do, yes. They had to move out, unfortunately, of their rental accommodation earlier this year. And, you know, they sort of tried to put a brave face on it and, you know, made a new start. Ruby actually started volunteering at a local library and, you know, did volunteered taking classes in computer skills for older people. They had to sell the car in order to fund the move. They're really looking now at the thought that they might not work again, that if JobSeeker is reduced to its previous rate, that they're going to be part of the casualties of this. You know, they pay $173 a week for their caravan site, plus $70 a week for electricity. They talked to us about, you know, the possibility of moving out away from a caravan site and just finding a piece of land somewhere. But as they say, you know, they're not getting any younger. They do enjoy that community. They feel they've got a lot to give back to that community. The difficulty is, the fact for them is they're probably not looking at a very optimistic future if that job seeker rate comes down. They've got another 5 and 6 years before they would be eligible for the age pension. And even then, our rental affordability snapshot shows, we've been doing that for a decade,
yes,
it shows there is very little affordability in the private rental market for people on the age pension. And as we project down that and we think about Ruby and Bruce as they enter their early 80s perhaps, when they're in a private rental house or, heaven forbid, still in their caravan, it is very difficult for them to then get the kind of support in the home that we're putting, that as a country we're putting into lots of people's homes to enable them to remain at home longer. We find often that private landlords are a little bit reluctant to put in a ramp or a rail in the shower, and these are things that actually the government pays to have put in. But we do see a difference between people who are in private rental accommodation and people in their own home and their ability to access aged care in the home. So that might be a long way down the track for Ruby and Bruce,
yeah,
but it's a reality. And the other thing is, you know, this is working against them actually taking part in their local community. So a great couple really trying to make the best of where they're up to and make a new start, who are not feeling very optimistic about the future post-December particularly.
Fran Baum, that's just one case study there from Casey. If we apply the principles around a social vaccine, which is what you're advocating here, how would people like Ruby and her husband be helped, supported to have breathing space into the future?
Yeah, well, we'd be saying that every Australian, everybody, has the right to live a life of dignity, and that's fair and that's decent for them. And we've heard all the sorts of ways how living in a caravan of trying to set up in a new community is really difficult. So, you know, if you take we've got an economic argument that says keeping JobSeeker at a level at which people can live dignified lives is good. But there's clearly a moral and social argument for that too. And I would add, you know, some people might be thinking, oh, that's those people, you know, they're living in poverty, they've probably done something wrong in their life. Well, we know that usually it's the circumstances, it's not the characteristics of the people. But there's also a lot of evidence that says societies that are more equal are also healthier for everybody. So it affects the whole of society. And it's not hard to see why, because if you start having a society with great inequities, then there's people who are doing badly, whose lives they feel they're living a life that's they're not valuing as much as they should. But other people then have, you know, crime rates go up, the social dislocation goes up, and people who are better off, you know, have to live in more fear because of that. So in very unequal societies like South Africa and Brazil, you see people actually putting themselves in gated communities, having armed guards, and the whole sort of notion of social trust and social capital begins to break down. So it's not just the impact on the individual, it's what does not giving people enough money for a decent life mean for all of us? And I think that we really need to reflect on that as a society, because in the last 25, 30 years in Australia, we've got steadily less equal as a community. And that's now beginning to show in health statistics, where there's an increasing gradient between the people at the top of the gradient and the people at the bottom. And I don't think that's the type of society that most Australians want to live in. We've always impressed on ourselves the importance of the fair go. And having a fair go means giving people the means to live a decent life, I think, Michael.
Let's come back to you here, Casey, because I'd like to also examine another case study of Rosa in Western Australia, where this extra supplement that's now JobSeeker that has been in place but is due to be reduced at the end of this month has given her the breathing space to do what with her family?
Well, really, to do all the things that make us human. You know, she has been out of work for 3 years, and she was doing work for the Dole that you know, had sometimes some of those things, they set out to be helpful, but they can actually be unhelpful. There's lots of hours, there's lots of requirements and reporting things. But what it's enabled her to do is to care for her grandchildren, which has enabled her daughter to go for work out to work. Her daughter's on JobKeeper, and childcare was becoming difficult for her to afford. But it's also enabled her to catch up on the last 3 years of being out of work. And Rosa's not a lone case, where we've heard from people, and Rosa told us this, that she's been able to buy a refrigerator. It is hard for most of us to believe that there are a large number of people in Australia who don't have access to a daily refrigerator. And so they're buying food daily at a much more expensive rate. It's an odd irony, but it costs more to be poor. It's actually quite expensive to be poor, because you're buying food in small amounts and you're buying less nutritious food.
Yes.
So she's bought herself a refrigerator, and she's quite delighted that she's been able to put money away for future emergencies. So, you know, instead of thinking that if she gets a flat tire or if, you know, she has some funeral expenses to cover for a family member or any of those kind of things, or even a visit to the doctor, instead of having to come down to one of our emergency relief centres and explain what's going on and ask for some money for food so she can reallocate the budget, she's actually got some savings put away. We're not talking thousands of dollars here. We're not talking about people, you know, padding the underneath their mattress. We're talking about human dignity and about people actually being able to plan for a bit of a future.
Time is upon us, but I think it's important to recognise as we finish up here to recognise too, and the Federal Treasurer has said this, Josh Frydenberg, we are going to see a significant number of people in the next few months moving from JobKeeper, because those businesses and workplaces won't survive in some cases, moving on to JobKeeper. So let's keep that in mind as we have this ongoing discussion. Casey Chambers, Fran Baum, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Casey Chambers, Executive Director of Anglicare Australia, Professor Fran Baum, Director of the Southgate Institute for Health, Society and Equity at Flinders University. Erica Voles, I asked people to get in contact. Have they done so?
They have responded. I won't be able to get to all of the comments just now. Interesting perspectives. One listener says the pension plus rent allowance and family is adequate. Why do unemployed get more? No wonder they won't pick fruit, etc. Sorry. And look, I think Casey Chambers discussed research highlighting a lack of affordable housing, even with rental assistance.
Yes.
Stephen says, instead of giving our taxes back to the people that paid them, the federal government has given them to business. We don't need jobs, we need money. Why can't Morrison just print more of it? There's no debt, so why are they stopping their JobKeeper and JobSeeker payments? One listener also points out...
They're not stopping, we should point this out.
They're reducing.
They're reducing.
One listener says, not everyone was eligible for JobKeeper. It would have been nice, Michael, to have been eligible for JobKeeper for the last few months after a Conservative 1,000 hours of unpaid marking over a decade at a university, I am now depleting retirement savings. Another listener says, job seeker cuts are going to result in more depression, domestic violence and desperation. We need a permanent raise, not insecurity at Christmas. This comment, when the supplement was taken away, the punitive behaviour will return. I'll be cancelling my claim and trying to get by. I don't know how, but punitive bullying ruins my mental health. Turning 60 in November, not capable of physical working now. I'll have more comments later in the show, but lots of responses on this, Michael.
Erica, thank you so much for that. And thank you to everyone who's taken part. We'll be reading more a little later. You're with Life Matters here on ABC Radio National.